Welcome to The Playful Creative, a place to explore how playfulness, art, curiosity, and creativity enrich the human experience. I'm your host, Sarah Moyle, a visual storyteller and creative catalyst. I'm endlessly curious about the ways people bring creativity, experimentation, art, and play into different areas of their lives. So listen in to learn from play experts, artists, musicians, scientists, and so many more interesting people. On this episode of The Playful Creative, we welcome David Chislett of Change Pilot. Born in Britain, raised in South Africa, resident in the Netherlands, nowhere and everywhere are home to David. He's a published author, poet, musician, and artist, and has been an entrepreneur for over 25 years. The link that joins everything in his life together is creativity. In his keynotes and workshops, people and teams let go of their attachment to what is in order to find out what can be, exploring how to take what they have and extend it into the future, instead of ring-fencing it in the present with rules. He is forever curious, which leads him to always ask why and how. As a result, his career has enabled him to join dots across many worlds. Today, we'll talk about creativity, innovation, and what those words mean to us in a world of business buzzword soup. So no matter who you are, where you're from, or how you like to be creative or playful, we're glad you're here with us today on The Playful Creative. All right. Welcome, David, coming to us from the Netherlands.
Yay. Goedenavond. Goedemiddag. Hello.
That's great. So happy to have you here with me today.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your Change Pilot and your pirateness.
Right. Yeah. So, it's all kind of rooted in this idea that rules just give you more of what you already have. So, if you want change, if you want improvement, if you want innovation, you got to break rules. So that's what the whole pirate thing is all about. Because what did the pirates do? They broke rules. Mm-hmm. But more than that, they then made their own rules. They set up their own game and they, you know, moved to another part of town and they just did their own thing entirely. And so I'm a big believer in that. I think the current game is basically rigged. I feel it's a moral imperative to break those rules and to find a new way of doing things.
Arg.
Yeah.
That's so great. So I was really excited to have you on here today because I know you've spent a lot of time in the creativity, play space, in the business world. Mm-hmm. And so I thought we would spend a little bit of time up front just talking about why play and creativity are important, first of all, and then we'll go from there.
Cool. All mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, play and creativity are so important at work because most of the time at work, at least half of the activity that's going on is measurement. KPIs, KPAs, goals, performance reviews, matrices, and what have you. And the trouble with all of that is that it presupposes a one-size-fits-all solution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we aren't all one size by any stretch of the imagination. Every human being is unique. And when you have a one-size-fits-all approach and you've got predetermined outcomes and predetermined units of measurement, you're going to cut a lot of dough outside the cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, play and creativity and bringing an environment where those things are not just allowed or tolerated, but encouraged and worked with, gives businesses the advantage of people bringing their whole selves mm-hmm. to what they do. And instead of just being concerned with hitting that predetermined goal, seeing how far they can go. And it's a totally different attitude. And, you know, one that unfortunately runs afoul of the kind of established management status quo and the way things are currently seen. So, you know, when we look at what's happening to the world with climate change, with you know, the advancement of AI and automation, and the increasing pressure on employers and employees and global taxation, you kind of think, well, it's fairly obvious, no matter what you believe about the origins of all of these difficulties, that we can't just carry on doing what we've been doing. But if we just stick to the rules such as they are, that's all we're ever going to get, is what we've been getting. So I see play and creativity as the primary levers to try and crack open that case and to make other options possible and available.
I love that. And setting you up, when you enable that, setting it up, setting yourself up to exceed far beyond, exceed your expectations, your wildest dreams. So why limit yourself, right? When you could not even be able to fathom what is possible.
Absolutely.
Yet. Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the fundamental principles of improv is to say yes and, right? You know, your average meeting at work goes, yes, but. You know, which just clamps down, which severs, which shortens, which insults. You know, it's so counterproductive. You know, it doesn't even matter if you actually end up doing where you went with the yes ands. Going through with the process allows you to paint deep into the corners and to see what lies outside the outlines of the current picture. And it's just not generally tolerated. You know, it's people who do that are considered to be risky, hard to manage, mavericks,
pirates,
yes, rule breakers, undesirables, basically. Like, go away, please, don't come and upset our apple cart. And actually, the apple cart needs to be upset. It's about time we kicked it over.
Yeah. And this can be applied way beyond work. This can be applied to any area of life, really, you know.
Yeah.
Relationships, personal goals.
Absolutely. I mean, my mantra for my work is rebel, reject, create. And the first part, rebel, is about breaking the rules, about challenging the status quo. But the second part, reject, is about reject your biases, your preconceptions, your programming, your socio-political, cultural background. Question everything. Because there's just as good a chance that you are getting in your own way with your own limiting beliefs and your own, you know, stuff you've taken on by osmosis from your parents and your peers and your school, as that it is the voice of authority that's limiting you. Because only once you call all of those things into question will you have enough room to create, to truly create.
Yeah, and you know who's really good at this? The little kids.
Yes.
They are always pushing boundaries and testing the limits of things, much to their parents' chagrin often.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes me think of the NASA creativity score study that was done, where they measured the creativity levels of different age groups.
Yeah.
And whereas 98% of 5-year-olds tested at that genius level for creativity, it just goes down so drastically. By age 10, they're down to only 30%. By age 15, it's 12%. And then by the time we're adults, only 2% of us.
Yeah.
Only 2% of us maintain that high level of creativity that almost all of us once had.
Well, and I firmly believe still do have. It's just that we've been socialized out of that behavior. And in fact, it's been stigmatized. You know, in my work, when I speak to people and I use the word creativity, I can literally see people recoiling. It's like, oh my God, he's a weirdo. You know, we can't have that stuff around here. You know, it's dangerous. And yet, you look at any corporation, any product any brand, what sits at the core of all the value that that corporation represents is intellectual property, which is just a fancy word for an idea, which somebody made up, created, plucked out of their fantasy. It all comes from there. So it's, for me, it's a massive like exhibition of cognitive dissonance that this very same people who are uncomfortable with their employees and their colleagues being creative because it's unmeasurable, we can't put a price on it, we can't put a value on it, when everything that they have, the only value it has, is rooted in an example of that unmeasurable, unquantifiable thing. It's like, come on, people. If we had more creative people, maybe we would have more IP. Maybe we'd actually have even more value. What are they on about?
Yeah. And I think it's often associated with really what they call soft skills, right? Or they imagine, like you said, it's so unstructured that it's frivolous.
There seems to be this hugely dominant preconception that there is no gray area when it comes to being creative. You're either full-on, tie-dyed, acid-dropping, unreliable, flaky creativity beatnik, or you're a suit. The idea that you could turn creativity on and off and use it in appropriate dosages and appropriate situations doesn't seem to occur to a lot of people in business. It is so polarized, which is okay. I mean, I know why that is, because of the massive myths that exist in our society. You know, if you look at rock stars and Hollywood actors and what have you, it's, you know, they go out of their way to propagate this idea that all they're ever doing is being hey, shawawi, wild and creative. When, you know, if you've ever met anybody who's worked in those industries, you know that in actual fact, the moments of creative glory are few and far between and linked only by hours and hours and hours of very hard work. And it's that part which just gets missed. And, you know, so when you're a kid, when you're one of the 95% of genius level creatives, you know, work isn't an issue because you're connecting the dots. You're trying everything out. You have no fear of failure because you don't even know what that means, because every time you don't quite manage to do what you're trying to do, you learn something. So the next time's better. And, you know, as we start moving through school and we get standardized testing and we get goals imposed on us from outside, extrinsic motivation as opposed to intrinsic motivation, that just gradually gets hammered out of you until we sit here as adults in a situation where fully rational, intelligent human beings have very weird ideas about what creativity actually is, what it does, and what creative people are like.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what I think you and I have a common understanding of what we mean when we say creativity. But like any word, people take understanding and meaning from their previous experiences or what they've been told or heard. So let's talk about what creativity means to you.
All right. For me, creativity is the process, the intellectual or intelligence-driven process, which happens within your mind when you join the dots to come up with a new idea or a new iteration. In order to do that, generally you need knowledge and skills. And unfortunately, most of the time, the world out there hears the word creativity and they think art. Now, my understanding of this is that art is not creativity. It is one product of creativity. The theory of relativity was also a product of creativity. You know, Einstein literally dreamed that up and then managed to prove it with lots and lots of hard work using his knowledge and his skills. But the product itself was something that he conceived, that he thought of. So, you know, highly successful entrepreneurs are actually very creative human beings. They come up with new products, new processes, new ways of doing things, new ways of taking things to market. Scientists, goodness me, you know, where do we think these hypotheses come from that they test in the lab? You know, they make it up. They are creative. And so these are also products of creativity. And then the other problem is that, of course, we've got this obsession with the idea that all has to be, whoa, huge.
Yes.
And that it's not creative if it isn't high art or high invention or very amazing science.
Patented, fully.
Every time you take a butter knife and tighten the screws in your door handle so it doesn't fall off, you are being creative. You are taking something that is not designed for that purpose and you're thinking, well, it looks like a screwdriver. And you do it. You're joining dots that don't belong together to come up with a new way of doing things.
There's a There's a really fun brain exercise that you can do, which is pick a common object like a fork or a knife, butter knife, and spend a minute, time yourself, thinking up as many different ways, different uses for that object as you can, and then do it again without duplicating and see what you come up with, because you'll surprise yourself, I think. And the first ones may be pretty obvious and plain, but as you push yourself to go farther and further, I bet you'll come up with some very creative ideas.
Yeah. The second list is always way more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, indeed. And so, you know, what play does is it puts you into a state of mind where it's easier to make creative leaps, because it isn't goal-directed, because it isn't extrinsically motivated, because it isn't predefined. Yes, there are some rules and some game, you know, in games, but they're not the kind of rules which tell you exactly what you have to do all the time. So especially free play is the best place to stretch your creative legs.
Yep. And sometimes having a couple rules as just parameters is actually helpful, especially if you're not as used to engaging in free play. It can help give you somewhere to start.
Well, you know, rules quite often are half the fun because
it's a challenge. You
know, right. And to get into flow, as Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi says, you need to be pushing yourself just beyond your known limits. And so quite often that's the function that rules play. They say that is what forces you to go that little bit further, to just get beyond where you were yesterday and therefore to discover something or to experience something new.
Yeah. And if you don't know what flow is, it's that experience where you're doing something that meets you at the right place for your skill and the challenge, and you lose track of time. It's like you look at the clock and you're like, how did an hour just pass? Because it is just the right level and you're fully engaged in that activity. Yeah. And that could be when you're playing an instrument, running, working on a problem. There's lots of different ways you can get into that state of flow.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. One thing that I popped into my head as you were talking about creativity is this notion that it's all in all the left-brained people are the creatives, right?
Yeah.
So that's actually really not true, because it takes both sides of your brain to come up with a new and innovative idea. You have to expand your thinking, come up with lots of options, and then you have to converge.
Yeah.
To combine old information with new ideas and create something novel and creative. Yeah.
That whole left brain, right brain thing is a leftover from the 60s when we didn't have the technology to monitor brain activity while people were being creative. We now know that, in fact, three dominant areas in the brain are involved in the creative process. One from the left, one from the right, and hey, one from right in the middle. The executive functions is also involved. And so, again, this is one of the myths, isn't it? It's that it's all flim-flam and there's no rationality. There's no logic to it. When in actual fact, what you're saying is 100% right. You know, if you don't if you don't converge, if you don't narrow down, if you don't cut the chaff and sort out the wheat, you know, no one cares. And therefore, have you actually created anything if it doesn't see the light of day and it doesn't get used? So, yeah, it's not really that at all. You know, I grew up in the arts and culture industries, and you know, there everyone's the next rock star and the next great poet and the next author, and they've all got great ideas, which they're very quick to say, "Don't you dare use that, because you know I'll sue you." And you know, 10 years later, they still haven't done it, because they too are so focused on this whole left brain, woo woo woo. It's all fluffy and weird. It's all about the ideas, and have never managed to step through into action. And so there's an organization out there called Foresight, and they do, it's a bit like Insights, right? They do personality testing, but for creativity. And according to the Foresight system, there are actually four distinct creative types. You know, so it's not even, you know, being creative is not a personality type. You can have high detail creatives, you can have big picture creatives, you can have solution driven creatives, and you can have action driven creatives. And so all of these people are utilizing this creative capacity in our brains, that kind of like sausage machine. But they are interested in different areas of the problem, and therefore will generate different kinds of solutions. And if you've got a team full of high detail creatives, quite often you're going to miss the big picture. In the same way as in a company, if you've got too many blues and not enough yellows, you know, it's got to be a balance. It can't all just be the dreamers. It's also got to be some activators, some people actually want to do stuff, implement things.
And I think another way, or something that I've been working on for myself, is recognizing that and asking to partner with other people that I know will complement me.
Because here we go. Creative myth number one, it's a solitary activity. Absolutely not. You know, it's just, that is so annoying. Because again, you know, this idea that as a creative, you own the whole path and it's only up to you, and you know, in your magnificent solitariness and your ivory tower. No, people, it really, really, I mean, yes, of course, there are some people that have enough skills across the board to be able to do that kind of thing. If, you know, history is littered with the exceptions to the rule. But that's why we know them so well, because they are the exceptions. There are so few of them. The rest of us do it way better in a team. Way better. And not just a creative team, like as in with, if I'm a high detail person with a big picture person or an implementer or what have you, but also in terms of, do I have a support structure? In his magnificent book, The Creative Curve, Alan Gannett talks about the four pillars of every average creative person's life, which involves a master teacher, a representative, someone who goes out and sells for you, your modern muse, and your conflicting collaborator. In other words, actually someone who's your buddy but who disagrees with you and pushes your buttons and asks you to explain everything. And he says, you know, if you look at the people around anybody who's being successful in the world today at the moment, where they use creativity, be it in business or in academia or sport or the arts, in their inner circle, you will find these four people. And if you, and what I've realized is that if you don't have those four people, you're going to find it quite hard to make a sustainable career out of whatever it is that you do using creativity. Whether it's an entrepreneur or an artist, you really need to have those people around you. So again, getting back to what you said, it's not solitary.
No, and I truly cherish those colleagues that I have in my network that I can bounce ideas off of too, especially because before I get down too far a one path, I love to hear, you know, what am I, again, that dissenting view. So what am I missing? And I recognize too that some people may say, well, how is that different than saying yes, but in those meetings, right? But, and. And it's really important to also hear those different opinions and ideas.
I think the primary difference is that quite often in those brainstorms and those meetings where yes, but is said, it is not a safe environment.
True.
You know, when you have a relationship with someone where you feel free to bounce ideas, they can say yes, but as much as they like, because it's a safe environment, because you know they're not having a go. And the reason why they're saying but is to stretch the idea and not to take you down.
And
I think
it's
it's a very
someone,
important distinction.
And it's a trusted person. It's someone who you respect their opinion and feedback as well. It's not unsolicited feedback is the other thing. It's something you've asked for.
Yeah. I mean,
and therefore can value.
Most often, yes, but is a put down. It's like,
yeah.
no,
yeah.
shut that down, stop. But when you're asking for opinions, the but is, well, but have you thought about this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's great, but what about this aspect? You know, it's really inviting you to examine every corner of your new idea.
Yeah.
Because we all have blind spots with the stuff that we make, right? It's,
Mm-hmm.
we don't necessarily always think every angle through.
Well,
Because,
we can't because
right.
we have our unique experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that community, it's critical. You've got to have it.
Yeah. So we talked about a little bit about how the word creativity often evokes reactions, and they aren't always positive, at least in the business world.
Yeah.
So as a practitioner of, or a evangelist of play and creativity, how do you navigate that in your pirate ship?
Well, mostly that's why I now talk about being a change pilot. Because, you know, regardless of whether creativity in particular is a dirty word or one that gives people an allergic reaction or not, what they really want to know is that, can you help me solve this problem that I have? And the problem that most people have is dealing with the change that is occurring in their world, you know, whether that is because of their competition or new technology or changing economic situations. You know, the world is a dynamic place, and every change out there impacts a business somewhere in the world. And so I found that it's far more helpful to talk about dealing with change and problem solving than, hey, let me make you more creative, because that way people understand why they're doing what they're going to be doing with me, because it's going to help them be better at dealing with change, with being a little bit more proactive. And in fact, ultimately, my goal is to put people in a position where they can be the person giving someone else a headache because of the fact that they are now initiating the change instead of having to react to change. You know, it's a well-worn truism that people hate change.
Yes.
But if that was true, why would you ever go for an education? Why would you have a 5-year career plan? Why would you move house or change jobs? Patently, obviously, what we don't like is change that we don't feel like we're in control of. And what we do like is growth, which is just a nice, comfortable word for change. So if that's true, which I firmly believe it is, surely what we really need to be working on is just our attitude towards uncertainty. Instead of insisting that it's threatening because it's going to upset our KPIs and our KPAs and our business model, see it as the opportunity, which it actually is. And how do you get there? So that's really where my focus is now, is to help people engage with that kind of mindset where you accept the ambiguity and the complexity. And once you've done that, it's so much easier to look for the novelty, for the new ideas, and to not feel so threatened by uncertainty, but rather excited by it.
So you focus on the results and the outcome that they will get.
Yeah.
And you also it takes a lot of creativity to navigate through a change.
Yeah.
And then to get to the place where you're then capitalizing on it, right? And able to be more innovative in, I guess, intentional way, or what you would think of as an intentional way, versus feeling like you're reacting or just, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause then you always feel like, you know, someone's trying to oppress you. You know, if you're in a reactive state, it's, you know, somebody else is the boss, the boot is on the other foot. And that's not a very nice way to live.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the pirate theme. I think that's great.
Oi, hoi, me hearties.
So, when you work with a customer, what kind of transformation do you see in them personally?
The thing about becoming creatively activated is that it's enormously empowering. You know, because what happens when you realize that you can actually just make stuff up is you go, wait a second, that means I don't have to decide Pepsi or Coke. I can go, well, I'll just make something else that I actually like, you know, that's not bad for me. And then people go, but you can't do that. And then they go, but wait a second, I can. And so the immediate change that I see is this kind of transformation into some kind of manic, you know, creativity factory where people for a while literally just don't really, they kind of lose all focus in this realization that actually they could just make stuff up and it just like nobody died and nothing went catastrophically wrong. And like, wow, look at that. Wow, 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 wow. But that's then of course followed by and quite quickly by the realization that, well, hang on a second, this is wonderful and stuff, but how is this actually helping me? And then the question is, and this is the most interesting part of the work, is like, well, then how do we join, you know, where you were, what your concerns remain, with this new realization of how you can actually operate and how you can actually generate options. And that's where it starts. That's where the empowering side of things really starts to come in, where people kind of go, okay, well, so that means I need to rethink a few things. And that can be a bit of a long, dark tea time of the soul, you know, where suddenly people realize that, geez, you know, I believe a whole lot of things about what's possible and what's not, and what's the right way to do things and what's not, that I actually, which don't gel with the way I see the world. So I don't see the world as this predeterministic, cold, hard place. Why do I have these beliefs about what I can do at work or with work? So it can actually be very confronting.
Yeah. You have to re-examine all of those things you thought were set in stone.
Yeah, because they're not. They're just not. Stories.
Yeah.
So that's also a very interesting moment to be with people in, is when they realize that it's all just a story. You know, one that in most instances has been repeated so many times that one's not even sure when it began. And it's very threatening to let go of those stories because they feel a lot like who we are. And so then the next phase that's really cool is when people realize that they're not their stories, that those stories are just that, stories, that when you strip them away, they are still themselves.
Yeah, on a personal note, I've been doing a ton of this on myself because I realized how much of myself I had lost in being a mom.
Yeah.
And being in a marriage that wasn't fulfilling for me. And so I got divorced and I've been deconstructing, reconstructing, re-examining everything. Yeah. And so I've been using lots of creativity there.
Yeah.
And it can be really hard to examine those assumptions and beliefs, especially on something so personal.
Yep.
But it's also so reinvigorating and empowering, like you said, to take that time and think about what you actually want to be doing, where you want to be going, what stories you're telling yourself, and what stories you want.
Yeah.
For me, especially my kids to be told.
Yeah. You know, there are actually no shortcuts. It all takes work.
Mm-hmm.
The work doesn't always feel like work. And it's not always obvious that it is work, but time is always required. And I think that's something that we forget a lot in this instant gratification world where so many things are literally instant. That when you start talking about purpose and value, that what is required is time and effort.
That's honestly the biggest hurdle that I come across when I want to do a workshop with a group of people and make it deep and meaningful to get some different outcomes. But it's hard to get a business team to invest as much time as I think is necessary. So that's a big, big one.
It is. It is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how that's going to change at the moment because, you know, thanks to technology, so much stuff is available on demand in bite-sized, blah, blah, blah. You know, the illusion exists that the work can be done very quickly and very easily. But even if you're using those bite-sized bits of on-demand content, if you're going to get anything out of them, you're still going to have to do work.
You get out what you put in, is what it boils down to, I think. And can you do some version of that with a much shorter amount of time? Yeah. And it might be fine.
Yeah.
But again, you're sticking to the status quo, the rules that have been put in place before and how it's always been done.
Yeah.
Versus unlocking that potential that we talked about before.
Yeah, it comes back to the whole cookie cutter one size fits all thing. You know, if you've got if you've got a digital on demand thing, everyone's seeing the same thing. So, but we're not all the same. So, what are you actually getting out of this? Yeah, I mean, that's the real value of in person training of any description is that any facilitator who's even halfway good will pivot and change and adapt in the moment according to who's in front of them and what they're coming at the facilitator with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's, you know, so amazing about in-person training.
Yeah, even if you're following the same agenda and have the same goals, every session is different.
Yeah.
Based on who shows up.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's what makes being a trainer constantly interesting. Every group, every training space, you know, different times of day, they all throw up different things, even when you're doing the same material for the same reasons. Human beings are just not uniform and they just respond so differently to stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. This has been wonderful. I have one more request of you, which is to pose a challenge to the listeners for a way that they can tap into or explore their creativity or playfulness.
Do nothing. Switch off your phone. Resist the urge to listen to a podcast. Don't watch TV. Don't even pick up a book. Sit in a corner, stare out the window, and wait and see what happens.
Love it. I love it.
Cool.
We have so few of those moments.
Yeah. always on.
We carry a computer with a mini computer with us in our pocket. So any downtime right there is instant entertainment.
Yep.
So give yourself that gift back. I love that.
Cool.
All right. Thanks for listening. If you have anyone that you think would enjoy this podcast, please clue them in so that we can have more guests, and send me ideas if there's someone else you want to hear from. Until next time, thanks again, David.
Thank you, Sarah.